From the heart of the Forest City, Blackburn Media presents the Craig Needles Podcast, looking at the biggest stories in London and around the world and how they impact you. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
Friday Roundtable here on the Craig Needles Podcast. It is a somewhat dreary looking Friday, May the 27th. We are less than a week away from provincial election. We got some municipal election stuff to talk about. And we're going to talk about what happened in Texas as well. But first, I'll tell you who's here in the studio with me today. I am sitting with former city councilor Roger Carancy, political insider Nathan Smith, and activist and PhD candidate. Or you have a candidate? Selma Toba is here as well. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I just want to correct you. Oh. Nothing is ever dreary when you're involved.
Thank you, Roger.
Okay. I just need you to know that. And it's a pleasure to be back.
It's a mix of sun and cloud.
It's not dreary. Mix of sun and cloud. That's entirely fair.
I didn't realize we have to butter up the host.
Yeah, that's the main thing, actually, Selma.
Only two roundtable guests survive for the third round or the third topic. So, you know, lay the groundwork
best,
early.
What's best is donuts. Yeah. Donuts always.
Which I have not seen yet. So that's obviously we're grading on a curve here.
Next time.
Yes, please do remember that next time. So let's begin with what's going on here municipally in the city. We'll talk provincial election in just a second. But Ed Holder, who, full disclosure, that's who Nathan works for, is not running for re-election. Josh Morgan is running for mayor. And I look at this race, and I've been struggling to think about how this race doesn't wind up being something of a coronation. And maybe I'm not looking at this the right way, but is there really much intrigue in this upcoming mayor's race, do you think? And I know that we still got some time for people to register. We're not through provincial election yet, but it just doesn't feel like there's going to be a whole lot to grab onto, and there isn't kind of something this election is about. What do you all think about that?
I think, you know, it's always fun to watch who is going to come into a race, and there's always people that come out of the woodwork at times. I'm almost positive that you'll see somebody else from this council that will come onto the ballot. I don't think that person is viable, but I think that there will be somebody else. In what I've heard, I think Josh is a very capable person to lead the city of London. He's a nice guy. I've known Josh for quite a long time. I think he's very capable, very smart. So it'll be an interesting campaign, as they all are. But if it's just Josh who runs, then it's not going to be as interesting. It's just going to be a coronation. And that's not always good for the city, because you always want to see the dialogue. You want to see the different ideas people have that bring forward. I know that he's said that they're going to carry through some things that have been carried through from this previous council that he now sits on, which is good. You know, I agree with him totally on the housing issue. And hopefully there will be somebody else that comes forward too, that will help spice things up, because I know you guys like that.
It's way better for someone like me. Yeah, let's make it interesting.
And I think that the city gains as a whole if there are many ideas out there that come forward and are bandied about, and hopefully everybody picks the right one.
Yeah, I don't know about who necessarily is going to be stepping forward, but I think as someone who pays attention to politics, as someone who gets excited about campaigns, I'm really looking for someone who I would say understands the issues in London and really understands them as they pertain to the most vulnerable Londoners. Like, I want someone with a vision. I want someone with passion. I want someone who really speaks to the reality of what it is to live in this city. I know that there are a lot of platform points that have been brought up already in Josh Morgan's, I guess, his announcement yesterday in terms of housing, in terms of looking at some of those major issues. I think I want more than that. I think I want, you know, a thorough understanding of what it is to be in London post-COVID around homelessness, around some of those key fundamental issues. I think, obviously, as a visible Muslim woman and coming up to the one-year anniversary of June 6th, I think anti-racism has to be at the fore of what is being discussed. I think if you are someone who is seeking a position of leadership in the city and you don't have something substantial to say about the direction of racialized Londoners and how they feel right now in this moment, then quite frankly, you're not deserving of a position of leadership. And so I think those are some of the major issues that I'd like to see.
And I think that's fair. And I will note that Josh said to reporters yesterday when we did our scrum outside of City Hall that he's got some platform stuff that's coming up, but he said that he's going to wait for the end of the provincial election. Then he mentioned exactly what you just said, Selma. He doesn't want to be doing anything in and around June the 6th. He kind of wants that to be kind of an apolitical situation, which I think is absolutely the right decision for the city. I don't think we need to be politicizing anything that happened on June the 6th last year. We should have widespread agreement in the city of London that that was a horrific thing. We should be working as hard as we can to make sure that something like that doesn't happen again. Mm-hmm. Nathan, what do you think about what this election might be about?
Yeah, well, I don't, I mean, it's, I agree with Roger that it's a coronation isn't good for anybody, and it's not good for the person who may ultimately be coronated, if that's a verb. I think it's good for, even if there is a clear front runner, and I think Josh Morgan is, it's good for the candidate to be challenged by somebody to defend your ideas and to flesh them out a bit more, even if the person challenging those ideas is not someone who will ultimately win the race. But I do think that where it's positive for the city, hopefully, is that for a long time, for at least the last 10 years, mayoral races in London have been exciting for the wrong reasons. They've been sort of scandal-plagued. You've had mayors leaving in disgrace or under clouds or under controversies and whatnot. So, you know, having politics be relatively boring at the local level is not a bad thing. I think, again, it's within reason, but I think constituents are well served when you're not getting excited about the wrong things, which are things that are happening outside of City Hall and in personal lives and elsewhere. So I think that, and it's not just Josh running for mayor, but I think any incumbent running on this council or from this council has a pretty good record to run on. There have been some misses here and there, but generally speaking, I think they've been prioritizing the right issues.
Unless you're running on an anti-vaccine platform.
Well, yes.
Which somebody might be.
There'd be some debate there. Yeah. But I think, you know, you can debate the specifics and the solutions, but I think there's general agreement and widespread agreement on what the key issues are in London. And I think this council has reflected that. And so I'd much rather have a debate on specifics about, well, how do we deal with this issue? But nobody's saying, you know, racism is not an issue or that affordable housing is, well, that's for somebody else to worry about. There's general agreement on these bigger principles, which I think is encouraging. And I think that's what makes it difficult, especially so this time, for somebody who's not an incumbent to find a way in to sort of capture people's attention and imagination, because I think for the most part this council has been on the right track on the main issues.
Yeah, I think so too. And it is getting into the minutia, because we look at some of the things they've been criticized for, or some members of the council have been criticized for. Okay, maybe the west leg of the BRT and maybe some development issues kind of in the northwest end of the city in regards to the land swap for the school board and all this stuff, which, again, if you want to be critical here, that's fine with me. But I don't think that there's any supervillain on either side of those discussions. I think there can be disagreement, but I don't think that, oh, I'm on the other side of this means that someone's an awful or a bad person. And why we have elections is to flesh out sort of how the city feels about some of these ideas.
Well, and to me, I think the more, and you know, things can change both internally and externally that you've got no control over. So this mayoral race might become the most interesting one we've ever seen. Who knows? But if that sort of stays fairly even keel, to me, the more interesting thing is you're trying to forecast where this general election might be headed is what the makeup of council itself looks like, because there's going to be a lot of turnover, and that's assuming no incumbents lose, which one or two likely will, but you've got Jesse Helmer and Mosa Lee who are out. You've got a vacancy now in Josh's ward in Ward 7. There's probably at least a few more who
are not going to run.
Not going to run and haven't said yet. So you could be looking at 5 or 6 vacant wards without any incumbents losing. And so if you add a couple of incumbents losing, 1 or 2 even, that's a huge turnover. And to have, let's say, 7 new faces on council, that's almost unprecedented, I think. So that to me could be a really interesting storyline as we go.
You know, it may not be interesting to some people. And then is there some self-interest from my point of view? Yes, there is. The big issue regarding housing is not just going to be affordable housing, although it is an issue. Mm. The city has been lax in expanding its urban growth boundary, obviously due to the pandemic. They haven't done. I think they're behind a few years in getting that going. We keep talking about the affordability of housing in the city, not just affordable housing, but the affordability of housing. And I know, Craig, you and I are going to have this discussion probably later.
Yeah.
But, you know, my concern is they have to do it right. I know we've gone through the London plan. Mm-hmm. I know that the city was, you know, it was build up, not out. And I think there has to be a happy medium when it comes to that. And I think by building up and not out, what has caused the cost of land to rise in this city incredibly. And that is one of the main reasons housing is as expensive as it is. If you saw what the price of a lot cost 5 or 6 years ago to what it is today, it's incredible. When you're paying between $8,000 and $10,000 a front foot for a lot in the city of London, that's huge. I never thought we'd see it go that high so quickly. And the reason being is because of the limited land supply within the urban growth boundary. The City of London does have a lot of land. I know people talk about, you know, we don't want to go into the farmers' fields and build, but you're going to have to. And that's just the reality of a city. If you don't do that, the lifeblood to a city is cut off. You don't have people working. You have going outside the city to work. This is something that...
Well, what about the inverse of living in Lucan or Granton or Ilderton and coming into London to work and bring your kids to sports and whatever it is?
And that's happening. Why is it happening? Because, again, we don't have enough ability to build within our own confines of the boundaries of the City of London right now. And that's exactly, that's a great point that I was going to actually throw at you and say that that's something that that has to be discussed. Because people are coming into the city using the facilities paid for by the taxpayers in London, and we're saying, oh, look at all these people using it. And then you have to expand them. The people that are living in those communities don't pay for it. No. They're paying the taxes to the communities that they live in. So if we're not doing this, if we're not managing our growth better than we are at the moment, and it's not a dig against anybody. It's just the way it's happened over the course of the pandemic. We've seen things have to change that way. The London plan, people will always point to it and say, the London plan is the way we have to go. The London plan is a guide. It is not written in stone. It changes. And as times change and as we see things go different, we have to adjust to it. So that's what has to happen. And they shouldn't be afraid of doing that. That's going to be a challenge to the next council.
I think that's what I mean when I say I think we need somebody who's a visionary a little bit. And so because I think in terms of if we're going to be expanding the boundaries of the city and building outwards, like I want something more than London to be one big sprawling suburb. Like I think that has to be combined with a transit plan, that has to be combined with how is it that we're going to integrate the services in the way that people need them, whether it be school planning, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think I think that's one aspect that we definitely have to be thinking about, but I think it's combined with a number of issues. And that's what I mean when I say we need a visionary.
And that's 100% correct. And you have to do it all together, but you can't just say we're not going to build out anymore. You can't say that. And we've seen what the problem now becomes. You can't be forcing people with two kids, a husband and wife or whatever, with two or three kids living in
sounds familiar. Please continue.
Living on the 20th floor of a condo tower. You can't do that. There are people who do want that and they're fine with it, but most don't. And the city is not a marketer. The city is a planner, but they have to listen to what those who are selling, those who are building, those who are developers, and how they see the plans coming forward. There was warning in the past that this London plan would cause issues like this, and that's exactly what it's done.
Here's the thing with the London plan, is it was written up in 2016. Since then, here's some stuff that's happened. One, we had a global pandemic. Mm-hmm. We also have had a situation where the cost of housing in the city has risen astronomically.
Because of that, Craig.
But here's the thing, though. It's happened in other places. Like, it's happened in Kitchener-Waterloo, too, and their urban growth boundary wasn't the same as ours.
We've also had substantial population growth since it was written. And so, you know, I know you don't want to be redoing plans every 2 or 3 years, but it's a little bit... disingenuous, I think, to say that, well, Londoners had a chance to weigh in and this is what they believe. And we haven't had, you know, like 0.2% population. It's been significant population growth. So I don't, you know, these people are Londoners too that have come here over the last 5 or 6 years in large numbers. And if they sort of validate or approve of the main tenets of the London plan, then great. But, you know, we haven't heard from them either. And so to Roger's point, I think it's a good guide, but you've got to have some flexibility there because the city itself is changing all the time, both inside and due to factors outside of the city.
Well, there's a couple of things here. One, there's people that were living in the GTA that have moved here. And two, we've had increased immigration in the city. And I think both of those things are generally a good thing, but we have to adjust to that as a collective, right?
Yeah. Yep.
It's a great thing. It's a wonderful thing.
And I think hopefully what this, to sort of tie it all together, hopefully, what this means for the campaign and even sort of for the next term of council is that because, well, COVID is still there, it's now somewhat in the background. It's not the ever-present issue that it has been for the last 2 years. You can start to look beyond that because it's always been this sort of, you know, black dog on your shoulder for 2 years where you try to plan some things like, oh, there it is. I can't really think too far ahead because COVID is right there. Now that it is in the background and it's still there and hopefully, you know, there's not some variant we haven't thought of that really flares up, you can start having those conversations and those discussions about, well, how do we build, you know, not just 2 months down the road and kind of keep our heads above water? How do we build three, four, five, 10 years down the road and start putting your heads in that direction? Because I think it's a unique opportunity now that we haven't had for some time.
But if I can say one more thing.
Please.
And Nathan brings up a great point that has not been addressed. The issue of the pandemic and the mistakes that have been made federally, provincially, and municipally. Nobody has come up with any type of plan as to how we're going to deal with it again the next time it comes. That's something that has to be considered. How are we going to deal with things and not make the same mistakes that were made in the past?
What would you like to see? I've seen different municipally then.
You know what? I think the municipal is the least problematic government.
Kind of had the least on their plate, relatively speaking.
I think that you probably got to look more at the provincial than anything else. I think that's where some issues lie, but you can't make it political. The decisions that were made for the during the pandemic, a lot of them were political decisions. You shouldn't put somebody's health and make a political decision based on getting voted back in. What you have to do is make the most difficult decision that help protect people. And I don't think some of those things were done. I think we have to look at that. And how do we go forward when this comes again? We're forgetting about it. All we're thinking about now is, as Nathan said, pandemics is over. It's in the background there. But how are we going to deal with it when it comes back? Because it will come back. There will be another pandemic. And we've seen problems we've had. I'm surprised that you don't have the federal government or the provincial government that has put some type of task force in play. How are we going to deal with this the next time, and we're not going to make the same mistakes?
Well, you know, a perfect time to discuss that is during the provincial election, Craig.
Hey, that's the other topic I wanted to discuss today. Let's move on to provincial election right now. And this is, we were talking about coronations earlier, and just we just haven't seen the poll shift. Like the shift in the poll has been, hey, who's in second place today? And they're going to be around 23-24%. And then whoever's in third place is going to be around 23-24%. And the Conservatives are going to be somewhere in the mid to high 30s. And that's essentially been what we've seen regularly. Maybe a little bit of a dip for the Conservatives lately, but that's essentially the situation we're in. Selma, is this a fait accompli in your opinion? Is Ford just back in?
I really hope not. I'm in pain watching these polls. I'm one of those people that thinks that the pandemic was obviously very mismanaged when it comes to our provincial government. I think our healthcare system is in collapse. I think we're having nurses who are leaving the healthcare system en masse because of burnout, because they aren't being compensated properly. I think there have been disastrous decisions that have cost people their lives throughout. And I am extremely infuriated that we're in this position during the provincial election once more. Because I don't understand what necessarily it will take for there to be a different outcome, and I think that's just extremely disheartening. I'm happy, I guess, in a sense that it looks like London seats for the most part will stay the same. I think.
I think that's the safest bet among the bets. Yes, but not a certainty.
Yeah, I think we have some good advocates here in the city for what needs to change, and I hope that stays the same.
Well, I'm just surprised, I think based on the segue and we were talking about COVID and then we get into the provincial election that I really thought before this election was called, this election would be about healthcare and that's about it. Like there'd be competing visions for healthcare because the issue, I mean, we can discuss and debate the various decisions around the pandemic, but the biggest shortfall, and it was just touched on, was
we didn't have space.
We didn't have beds. Staff, and
yeah.
We don't have capacity, period. And it's not just an Ontario issue either. It's a Canadian issue about a lack of healthcare capacity. And so I understand why, you know, the Ford government wouldn't want to campaign on a two-tiered system or some sort of privatization. I thought maybe they'd go there because if ever there was a time to open that door, this would have been it coming out of that debacle.
Let's not give them any ideas.
Well, it's a little bit late and I think they're doing all right as it is. So they don't need to throw that Hail Mary. But I thought for sure the Liberals or the NDP would come out saying, look, it is clear. It's abundantly clear that not only do we need to look after the staff and find ways to fast track more staff into these positions, we need more hospitals. We need, and it could be an economic program. There's tons of construction money going into that. There's tons of jobs as a result of that. I'm just amazed that that's not real. I mean, they're talking about increasing pay here and there and kind of nibbling around the edges, but it's not been, if you ask somebody, what has the Liberal campaign been about? I'm not sure they could tell you what it's been about, but they wouldn't say it's about healthcare. And I don't think they'd say the same about the NDP. So it just seemed to me that, you know, this was sitting right there for either of those two parties to grab and make it sort of the issue without debating lockdowns or any of those other things, mm-hmm. and focus on the big picture thing that everybody can get behind.
Do you think we should have more doctors and nurses in hospitals in Ontario? And most people in Ontario say, yeah, okay, that sounds good to me.
Yeah.
And make that your campaign.
I mean, again, even if you want to throw a Hail Mary, and it's a difficult one if you're the NDP or the Liberals, if you're talking about taxes, but say, look, we're going to bring in a special, you know, healthcare tax where it's a really minuscule amount. All of that goes into funding. It's a pandemic-proof tax, something. Ford could then hammer them on the fact they're bringing in taxes, whatever. But I think if ever there is a time where people in this province would be willing to pay slightly more, knowing it's going into a dedicated pool to fund XYZ in the healthcare system, this would have been the time to try it. And nobody has. And instead you get talk about no HST on meals under $20 and buck a ride and all this stuff. And I don't see those as top of mind issues for the average person right now.
And I'll say, I mean, no matter who was, for the pandemic's sake, no matter who was there, I believe they would have all made the same mistakes or mistakes similar because of the fact nobody's had to deal with one before. There is a problem in healthcare. I think one of the problems is the issue of mental health care and the issue of healthcare. Mental health care is not even discussed.
Yeah, that's another one.
We do the bell, let's talk or whatever.
That'll be Monday's episode of this podcast.
You know, it's so bad in how we deal with that. And that has taken a lot of resources away from other things. But we have to put more resources into mental health. You cannot close, and I've said this many times, you cannot close mental health care hospitals and expect the problem to get better, because it doesn't. What we did, we closed the old hospitals, which we call institutions, that were dealing with people with mental health care issues because they were being run in a way that was from the 1930s and 1940s when you were in the 1980s and 90s. Mm-hmm. What they had to do was figure out how to run them more in a more modern way, not just close them down and then say, well, we're building a new one. Well, you're closing down 600 beds, but you're only opening 173.
Yeah,
that doesn't work. It doesn't equate. So, and again, the two parties that have been in power have not done a good job. The NDP can say whatever they want. They don't have, they've never given you how we're going to cost this. We're going to tax more, we're going to tax more. That does not help business coming to to the province. Having said that, I will say one, and Craig, I know you've mentioned regarding the numbers that you've said, I am completely surprised. You know my stripes.
Mm-hmm.
You know where I come from. You know who I've run for.
Yep.
I have never seen such disdain for a certain party in my life. I have never thought that you would see the support out there. And I have knocked on doors this during this campaign for people. And I'm surprised the support that's out there for the Conservatives provincially. And I will say this. I will say that I believe they're the only party that can do some of the things that they're talking about doing. I believe in this city. I will tell you this. I believe, you know, and I shouldn't be here because it sounds like I'm doing a program on or giving you some type of advertising for the candidates. The candidates that we have in London right now, I personally would rather have a candidate who sits at the table of government who makes the decisions rather than somebody who doesn't.
As long as they're good decisions.
Absolutely. But I would rather have them sitting at the table, being a part of it. And London, I think, has been shortchanged over the years because we haven't. And that's just, no. I believe that's reality.
Oh, but it's just the last 4 years. Like, you know, before that, the deputy premier used to represent this rider.
You're right. But you know what? They made the mistakes in healthcare that we're still
making. They made
today.
A lot of mistakes.
They made
in
mistakes. And I was part of that in the sense of the support I gave. But I've seen, you know, I can't say I've seen the light.
Yeah.
But I understand. Today, I think it's better to vote for the person rather than the party, and I think London has an opportunity to do that.
Here's what I'll say. You mentioned that, you know, you're not sure how the Liberals and the NDP are going to put in some of the stuff they've talked about. I think they've been pretty unimaginative with the stuff they've talked about, and that's the thing. That to me is the issue. Is they're not exciting enough people to say, oh, yeah, no, I'm voting for this party, and I'm excited about this, and I'm volunteering, and I'm doing this. And that's why I think you see some of the polling where it is, whereas those reliable Tory voters who always vote Tory are just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to vote for them again. They're in power, and it's been fine.
Charisma is not a part of this election in any way, shape, or form for any of those two parties. I mean, Andrea Horvath is, I think, way past her prime. Stephen Del Duca, who does not even have a seat I couldn't sit 2 minutes with him and hearing him explain anything because it's just not engaging. And that's the way I feel.
Here's what I'll say about the Del Duca campaign. And I was tweeting about this story earlier today. When they have a candidate in Chatham-Kent Leamington who has to be essentially removed because they were messing around with the nomination papers, and Stephen Del Duca's response is, "I cannot believe Andrea Horvath told anybody about this." Like, what the, like, is that the best you can do?
Well, do you wonder why Doug Ford is holding rallies and not making announcements in the final week? Because every day it's Del Duca versus Horvath.
Yeah, so they're going to be,
what's the point of me doing anything? I'll just go do a rally at night, and then I'll wake up late the next day, and I'll do it again. Like, he's there's no pressure on him in the final days of the campaign. This is like a dream scenario for him, where your two competitors are going at each other. Like, it's astounding.
I think for someone like me, I think I'm really struggling to understand at what point do people say we've had enough? Because from where I'm sitting, I think the pandemic was strongly mismanaged. I think I don't have any confidence or any faith that a conservative government will be able to make right decisions, and certainly not in my interest. And so I don't, when I hear that there is still strong support at the door, that just absolutely breaks my heart, because I think there are so many people who have been left worse off directly as a result of the decisions that were made by this government. And so I think that's something, a reality that I significantly struggle with.
I will say this, you will knock on some doors where people who are not worse off. You know what I mean? Like, it's so that this is the obviously door knocking. You're trying to find your voters, and that's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. In some places, you're going to find your voters, and some places, you're not going to find your voters. But I think it came down to, and continues to come down to, the parties that were not in government before this election did not give people enough to be excited about to go to the polls and say, "Hey, I want to vote for you," or to tell a pollster, "Hey, I'm going to be voting for Party X," or "I'm going to volunteer," or whatever it happens to be. And that wasn't the only issue of the campaign, obviously. It's hard to beat an incumbent government, a one-term incumbent government. That doesn't happen very often in this country. Usually we give governments two terms just because that's the type of voters we are. But it's to me, if I were in the orange or red camps this week and I'm kind of looking at the polls, and I'd be a little bit disappointed by the way this has gone. And I'll ask all of you, Andrea Horvath, I think this election is the end for her as the leader of the NDP. And I don't think anyone would dispute that. I don't think Andrea Horvath would dispute that. Del Duca is probably not going to be the leader of the Liberals. What do y'all think? Maybe he will be. I guess if they're second by 10 seats or so, maybe he gets to keep the job.
If this was 20 years ago, I think parties had more patience for giving leaders a second chance. I think, though, that even by that standard, when patience was a bit longer than it clearly has been recently, I think that if you're going up against a majority government and you don't reduce it to a minority, or that majority government grows its majority,
which may happen,
I think you've got to resign, and you probably got to do it on election night. I don't see any path forward.
The 24-hour news cycle now does a lot of damage to those who are in politics and lose elections, because you see them all the time. You know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see them doing well.
You just see them.
Their time is up. And that's why the difference between now and 20 years ago.
Selma D. agreed that if Ford's still premier on Friday, both opposition leaders, Horvath and Del Duca, probably in the road for them? Or do you think there might be some leeway there?
I think that would probably be the best move forward for both of the parties.
Del Duca may
Whether
not
or not
win
that'll
seat.
Actually happen, I think, is another question.
That's entirely fair. And you're right that Del Duca may not win a seat. Yeah. Like, Ford is campaigning in Vaughan Woodbridge. Like, and they're putting... Now, one could argue, hey, he's campaigning there because they think that their majority is safe, so they can, like, you know, really hyper focus on that riding.
Yep.
Now, if I were to be a little conspiratorial, and if I were Doug Ford, I'd be like, you know what, Stephen, you can have Vaughan Woodbridge. I'd love to see you again in 4 years, man. But that's how I would do it. But again, maybe I'm being
difficult. Doug Ford may not be there in 4 years again.
Well, maybe. Well, we'll see what Doug Ford's job is in 4 years. We'll see what the Polyev conservatives look like. I don't know if that's going to happen. I want to be clear. I want to talk.
Give me a headache, Craig.
I'm sorry, Selma. I want to talk about one more thing before we wrap this up. But first, I want to tell you about Lexus of London, who, of course, sponsors this podcast, Lifestyle with the Drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London, luxury redefined. Choose yours today at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warncliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. I want to talk about one more thing, and this is a difficult subject to talk about because it continues to happen. It's hard to find new things to say, and maybe there aren't any new things to say. But this week in Texas, there's a school shooting, and a lot of kids get killed. And it is once again the gun discussion for our neighbors to the south. Is there anything new to say or to think about this? And I'm not saying this to minimize what happened, of course, because it's heartbreaking. And I don't understand how anyone with a soul watches some of the interviews I've seen with parents on CNN. Anderson Cooper with that dad of the little girl, like, you know, I've got a little girl who's you know younger than that. She's not in grade two, but like, you can't help but put yourself in those shoes when you're watching this man express his pain on national television. But is there anything new to say about this, or is it just a situation where that's just going to keep happening there, and that's just the way it's going to be?
I don't know if anything new, but I think I saw that on Twitter in the aftermath of the shooting. As a Canadian was trending, and that really ticked me off. Like, no tomorrow. I think every time there is a tragedy south of the border, Canadians have this tendency to say, well, at least it's not us. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that is a helpful attitude. I don't think that's sympathetic to the victims of tragedy. I think that has the tendency of being a narrative that lets us off the hook a little bit.
Well, you and I think we talked about this on Twitter, Selma, when the Catherine McKenna tweet after the Buffalo mm-hmm. thing, I'm glad I live in Canada where stuff like that doesn't happen. Like, a 10-minute drive from my house, four people were run over because they were Muslim.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the Buffalo shooter, you know, a couple weeks back was inspired by the Christchurch mosque shooter, yeah. who was inspired by the Quebec mosque shooter. And so I think for us to say, as a Canadian, you know, that doesn't happen is extremely inaccurate and insensitive. I think, you know, definitely we don't have school shootings in the same way the United States does. No country does. That is, you know.
I disagree. That's why I will say I'll disagree with you because of what you're just saying.
So I think I think we need to still be introspective about the way that these issues manifest themselves in Canada. So if we are to talk about gun violence, for example, we should bring to the conversation intimate partner violence, and that the lethality of violence increases significantly when there's a firearm in the home. I think we need to be talking about police violence, that if you are a person of color, you are far more likely to encounter gun violence from cops. I think, like we said, the Quebec mosque shooting, I think we have to start thinking about the way that the issues that we criticize in the United States come to fruition in Canada if we are serious about making this country safe for everybody.
Yeah, looking down our noses at Americans or at America in general is a huge part of our national identity, whether people want to admit it or not. Nobody's taking glee over what happens there, but whenever something happens that's bad in the United States, either to the country or to the people, we take some degree of pride, well, how good we are. And that's a huge part of being Canadian, whether people realize it or not. Sometimes people are aware of it, oftentimes they're unaware of it. But what I would say about the shooting specifically, in terms of, you know, is there anything new to say? I don't think everything that can be said has been said, and the most poignant things that have been said are obviously by the victims' families. And so there's nothing that we can add here or any other, you know, pundit can add. But I think what will hopefully be different this time is, if you're looking at it from a purely political lens, the only way it's going to change is if you elect enough Democrats to get in and change it, and then they've got to have the spine to do it. But
right.
If you're looking at it purely from a political lens, you've got the abortion issue, and now you've got the guns issue, and you're going into midterms. And so if ever there were two issues that there's widespread popular support for these things too, which is the most maddening aspect of it. It's not a divided country when it comes to basic gun reforms or even the abortion issues. So these are two issues politically.
Stricter background checks pulls it like somewhere in the
80s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even abortion in the States is 65 or 70%. It crosses party lines. So if the Democrats can make the midterms about those two issues, which they should be, hopefully they get in. Failing that, which always seems to happen, this will get fixed, I'm convinced, because they fixed bigger issues in the United States than this. It will get fixed just through demographics and through time. The tragedy will be that obvious solutions are in front of them now, and it will end up taking 50 or 60 years to fix slowly, because they just got to wait till more people are born, more people become more educated, the demographics change, and it happens. But that's the tragedy, is that you look back on this in the year, 2050 or 2060, when they get it done, and say, this could have been done in the year, 1999 or 2000. And how many, at that point, thousands of children, never mind adults and people in general, have been killed because you wouldn't do basic reform that literally the rest of the world has done.
In my two cents, and I'm sorry that I'm just going to say this, that there is a difference in Canada and the U.S. in the types of guns that are sold.
Yes.
The vast majority of these, and Craig, I think I've been on your show so many times, that this is probably the fourth or fifth event that we've talked about, and it just keeps happening. It just makes you sick, and we all see it. And I saw the interview the other night, and there were tears in my eyes listening to that gentleman in that interview. The world has said, the President of the United States has made it very clear that this does not happen. That type of event does not happen. And not that I don't want to say we're going to muddy the waters when we bring in all the other stuff. We're not. those are very valid concerns, but talking about something as black and white as this, AR-15 rifles should not be sold to people. People who have mental issues should not have guns. Those are two very easy things to try to fix, because I know it will not always be totally fixed. Get on with it. The people that don't want to do it are supported by the NRA. They get millions of dollars in funding for their campaigns and for donations from the NRA. That's why they don't do it. You have to do it. It's been pointed out very clearly that it does not happen elsewhere because of those two things. So at least let that be the first step for the U.S. to take to stop that type of thing. Not saying that it's going to stop everything, but I think it'll be a big, big help. And I think the vast majority of people, not just in the U.S., but throughout the world, believe that too. So that's my thought on that. Everything else that you brought up, absolutely, I get it. But on this one here, do those two things and see what happens.
For sure. Yeah, no, I think there is a growing feeling of the necessity of those things happening. I think my issue is that you and I have no power over the American discourse, right, or the way that that plays out in the United States. We do have power as to how those issues shape up here in Canada. And so I think that's part of my frustration, is I wish that's what the focus was whenever these issues come up in the United States.
Yeah, and sadly, it's not, and I think we're going to have to go through a few more cycles. And Nathan mentioned the demographics thing. Here's what I think about from the demographics thing perspective: is there was some thought going into the 2020 election that Texas might be a purple state, maybe it's in play. Turns out it wasn't, but there was some thought that, hey, maybe Beto O'Rourke can be the senator from Texas, or maybe Ted Cruz is going to lose, and those things didn't happen. But we're seeing the numbers kind of squish together a little bit for the red and blue teams there. And then we look in Ohio, and they're kind of separating a little bit for the red and blue teams there. And you have to wonder, the way that demographics are changing in the U.S. Southwest, will there be a situation where the swing states are different states, and maybe places like Ohio rather than places like Texas are the swing states? And then once that becomes what's going on down there, does that change the way the political conversation goes? And I don't know the answer to that.
If
maybe
you give
it
me
does.
Texas, I'll give you Ohio.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're talking about the map, like,
yeah.
And that's what's going to happen. Like, I mean, Georgia was a blue state.
Yeah.
And I mean, Texas, I think, will inevitably go. Like, those urban centers become so big, and the people in those areas tend to be, you know, better educated, more, you know, they're more in tune with kind of just base. I mean, this is not it's just crazy to say, you know, they're more anti-kids getting murdered with guns. Like, that just should be a common theme among people. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the facts are that that's the way it goes. And so you see these huge centers become more Democrat, which is basically a centrist party in the worst of times. And that's the way
I would
go.
Say they're a right of center party relative to the world is,
Canada,
but
yeah. And that's the way it'll go. And so if Ohio becomes a swing state or some of those Midwest, fine. If you give me Texas, you give me Florida, you give me Arizona, that's fine. Like, in terms of how their
you
system
can have
works.
Ohio and maybe Wisconsin.
Ohio, yeah,
sure.
And that'll become a state that nobody campaigns in. And so it will get fixed. Again, like I said, the tragedy is that it'll be 50 years after when it should have been and could have been, at the cost of thousands of lives, literally.
Yeah. No, it's awful to think about, but that's the situation that continues to persist there. We'll have to wrap up the Friday Roundtable right here. So thanks very much to Roger and Nathan and Selma for coming in. Next week on the Craig Needles podcast, we're going to be hearing from Josh Morgan. We're going to talk about mental health supports in the province of Ontario. We have an election next week, so that's pretty good. And we've got a Friday Roundtable next week. Ali Jabbar will be here. Cheryl Miller will be here. I think Stuart Blair might be here as well. We'll talk to Stuart about that, but we'll see. Bring Stuart Blair back. So looking forward to that next week here on the Craig Needles podcast. Thank you very much for listening to this episode, which again was brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting for you at Lexus of London. Lifestyle with a drive. Luxury redefined. Choose yours today. The award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warrencliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. Please continue to listen to and subscribe to the Craig Needles podcast. You can find us at classicrock981.com and londonnewstoday.ca.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of Blackburn Media.